This podcast is brought to you by Reasons to Believe. Reasons to Believe is a science faith think tank integrating modern scientific discoveries with truths of the Bible. Visit our website at reasons.org.
Welcome to Straight Thinking, a program that highlights the importance of the life of the Christian mind and seeks to evaluate critical issues in light of the historic Christian worldview. This is Joe Aguirre, your host, along with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples. Hello, Ken.
Hi.
Ken, you've been talking about the resurrection now for a good, I think we've done five podcasts thus far. And
yes.
Got three more to do in this series. On the last time, you introduced other alternative explanations, especially those that naturalists would bring to the table. So you talked about two of those, and you got a couple of more today, right?
That's exactly right. I want to explore two more naturalistic hypotheses in terms of explaining the data for the resurrection. Again, we'll bring back up this concept of abductive reasoning. And then in the next podcast, we'll knock off a couple more alternative explanations.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a minute. But first, another reminder that the Alaska Cruise Conference is coming up August 8th through 15th. This will be your chance to be with the scholar team over 7 days on a terrific cruise through the Inside Passage of Alaska. This would be the panhandle of Alaska, that part that comes down the Canadian border. It looks like a lot of islands there, Ken, and a chance to see wildlife and glaciers and get off the boat and have a terrific time. So
yeah,
you're going along with the scholar team.
Absolutely. In fact, I think, you know, we're flying into Vancouver, Canada, so that'll be the jumping off point. Mm-hmm. And sounds like it's going to be a great trip. We're going to talk about the days of creation in our evening lectures. There's going to be a lot of downtime where people can talk with the scholars, go on day trips with them. And you know how the food is on a cruise.
That's right.
It's hard to resist. I think this is going to be a great time. And the cruise line has dropped the prices, making it more affordable during this kind of tough economic time. So
yes, yes.
Some good incentives there.
You can go to our website and you'll see the place to get information right there on the home page. You can view a video on it. You can get all the information from Inspiration Cruises regarding rates and how to get to the location and so on and so forth. Again, the dates are August 8th through the 15th. You want to get your cameras because you're going to see spectacular scenery. Imagine watching glaciers fall from the ship. Hopefully you won't be too close. I'm sure they keep you a little distance away, but nonetheless, what a sight to see. So, Ken, we want to encourage people to take advantage of it. Time is getting shorter, but there's still time to register for the conference. 7 days of creation with the RTB Scholar Team. Again, August 8th through the 15th. Go to our website for more information on that. Okay, Ken, well, let's pick it up where we left off on other explanations, hypotheses that naturalistic explanations offer for the resurrection of Christ.
And of course, as we have been talking about in the last couple podcasts, we're taking an abductive approach to this. An abductive approach to reasoning means that we're looking for the best explanation of the facts surrounding the resurrection of Jesus. Those who adopt a more skeptical, naturalistic point of view are not happy accepting a supernatural explanation, so they've advocated different interpretations. Last time we looked at myth and legend. We also looked at the idea that maybe the disciples came and stole the body and it was a hoax. Saw that both of those are inadequate explanations for a number of reasons. So in this program, I'd like to look at two more, Joe. Hypothesis number three, maybe the women went to the wrong tomb. Now, here is the context for all of that. These are women followers of Jesus. They were devoted to him, gave great amounts of their time in support of his ministry. Maybe seeing him publicly crucified, they were in great grief and sorrow. And maybe in that context, you know, they just took a wrong turn and went to the wrong tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the explanation for all of these kinds of things. Well, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
There are some serious criticisms that mm-hmm. regard to that. I mean, the women followers of Jesus might have mistakenly gone to the wrong tomb, But wouldn't Joseph of Arimathea known the location of his own tomb? I mean, that was his tomb.
Yeah.
If they made a mistake and took a wrong turn, Joseph of Arimathea would say, wait a second, I can solve all of this. You were at the wrong location.
Yeah.
Wouldn't the apostles have insisted that this correction be made in this kind of context? I mean, you might have a hard time finding my house in Riverside, but hopefully I wouldn't have a hard time finding my house in Riverside.
That's right.
So this could easily have been resolved.
Yeah.
Another criticism, would the Roman soldiers who were commissioned to guard the tomb, would they have gone to the wrong tomb? I mean, they had to know where it was in order to carry out their duties. By the way, those Roman soldiers were commissioned that if anybody was allowed to escape, or those who had crucified Christ, if that person had escaped without being executed, those Roman soldiers themselves would have been held to execution. Mm. So the soldiers were very serious about their job.
Mm-hmm.
The third criticism, since it was in the best interests of both Jews and Romans to squash Christianity, if Jesus' body was actually lying in another tomb, didn't the Jews and the Romans have both the motive and manpower to find it and thus put an end to Christianity before it ever began?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about some very motivated groups who want to squash this whole thing. And they had power. They had money. They had manpower. They could have done that, but they were never able to find the body.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Ken, is there anything known about this area? Would it have been a large, I'll use the word cemetery, thinking in modern terms, like a forest lawn where, you know, you've got thousands and potentially everybody went to the wrong place?
Well, there would have been a context like a cemetery, mm-hmm. and we do know things about how these tombs were prepared. Mm-hmm. This was a new tomb. It was freshly cut, so they would roll a boulder in front of it, that kind of scenario, rather than being buried in the ground. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't so many that, you know, you'd have difficulty, particularly a fairly wealthy individual like Joseph of Arimathea.
Yeah.
And he was on the Sanhedrin. He would have a distinguished position. So it would be hard to misplace his tomb.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Here's another criticism, Joe. How does this explanatory hypothesis, it's supposed to explain things. Well, how does it explain the resurrection appearances? If they went to the wrong tomb, that might explain the empty tomb. But what about the resurrection experience, mm-hmm. the appearances? What about the transformation of the apostles? What about the formation of the Christian church? Here is a key point. These naturalistic explanations often suffer from a devastating element. They can't explain all the data. You'd have to have women going to the wrong tomb to explain the empty tomb. Then you'd have to have some other theory, maybe hallucination, or to explain the resurrection appearances.
Yeah.
None of these theories explain all the data, and that's a big weakness.
They're incomplete.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
So I'm going to argue, when it comes to the idea that the women went to the wrong tomb, that this hypothesis plays fast and loose with the facts, that it lacks explanatory power and scope, that it really is not a comprehensive explanation for the events of the resurrection of mm-hmm. Jesus.
Do scholars still hold that position? Somebody must hold it today. It's one of the alternative explanations.
It's one of the standard interpretations.
Really? Okay.
I'm not sure, frankly, I'm not sure any of these views carry a lot of weight with a lot of people because they all have serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
And again, somebody might try to throw together a combination.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Okay, another naturalistic hypothesis, we'll call it hypothesis number four, maybe Jesus wasn't really dead.
Now, that one's interesting for me.
Now, they would say perhaps he only looked dead, but subsequently he revived in the tomb and appeared to his disciples as, quote, the risen Lord, unquote. This has long been called Joe the swoon theory.
Mm-hmm.
Swoon means that Jesus appeared to be dead, but he later revived and was able to convince people that that he was the Messiah.
Yeah. Well, after all, Ken, you can imagine somebody suffering such horrifying pain on the cross, maybe going unconscious, and people thinking, oh, he's dead.
Right.
So, I could see that.
And, you know, this is a natural explanation that maybe we don't need a resurrection because there was never really a death.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can recognize why people would be initially attracted to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, Joe, the problems are significant, mm-hmm. I think devastating. first criticism, the Roman executioners, they confirmed that Jesus was in fact dead. In fact, they thrust a spear into his side. This was an evidence that he was in a state, the liquid that came out indicated that he was dead.
That's recorded in at least one of the Gospels, right? That's
exactly right.
Yeah. Okay.
And they didn't break his legs. Crucifixion, you ultimately died of suffocation.
Yeah.
And they would break the legs because you had this tendency to want to lean up to try to catch your breath. They'd break the legs and lead people to suffocate more quickly. Well, when it came to Jesus, they didn't have to break his legs because they confirmed that he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are Roman soldiers that I think we can conclude are probably pretty good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they had a lot to lose if they were sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
They could suffer a capital punishment.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Another criticism, could Jesus have survived after suffering severe torture, crucifixion, and 3 days in a cold tomb with no medical attention? I mean, Jesus was scourged. This was a use of a whip with sharp pieces of rock at the end of it to cut the skin to cause the person to bleed so that this would be part of the process of death. They'd lose all of their strength and, you know, they would hang on the cross and they would suffer. I mean, the Romans took this practice of crucifixion from the Phoenicians and they perfected it. They essentially took people who were threats to Rome and said, we're going to publicly crucify you and give you an excruciating death. I mean, that word comes from crucifixion.
Yeah.
So it seems very unlikely, very improbable.
It would have been a lot of blood loss, trauma.
Absolutely.
So how do you bounce back from that?
Does he move the stone out of the out of the tomb?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could add one on top of that. Could Jesus have convinced his disciples that he had gloriously and triumphantly risen from the dead when his medical condition was at best critical?
Hmm.
I mean, that just does not seem reasonable, plausible, and likely, given what we know about crucifixion. A couple other ideas that we can throw in, Joe. Does anything we know about the historic Jesus lead us to believe that he was a charlatan?
Hmm.
You know, was he plotting to somehow convince his disciples that he was something that he's not? I mean, frankly, I've spent a good bit of my adult life reading about different figures in history. Joe, Jesus seems so unlike the rest of us. He faces every circumstance, whether it's trial or crucifixion, with courage, with honesty, with truthfulness. It doesn't fit his character to fall into that category. Thus, I conclude that even though it may seem initially likely that maybe he could have, just appeared to have died but not, that this hypothesis, it doesn't fit the facts. We have to bring things in that are not there. It doesn't seem plausible at all. My wife works at an emergency hospital. They bring people in that are critical. It's very difficult for them to get up and convince people like Jesus would have had to that he was the resurrected Lord, and it lacks explanatory power.
Mm.
And so we've seen thus far four of those theories, and they all seem very inadequate.
Mm. Yeah. And again, you're applying this principle of abductive reasoning, that which explains all the facts, takes into account all the data. It's fully orbed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be coherent. It's got to fit all of the data in it. The more simple it is, the better in that kind of context. And I don't think any of these theories thus far have fulfilled the requirement as a good hypothesis should.
Very intriguing, Ken. And you got a couple more you're going to talk about next time.
Next time, got two more.
Okay, looking forward to that. We hope you're enjoying this series. You can give us feedback by sending it to ask@reasons.org. That's the site that's been set up to answer questions on our other podcast called I Didn't Know That. But, of course, we can take a question or two on this podcast as well. So if you have some feedback or questions, send them to ask@reasons.org. Ken, how about a resource or two? You talk about this in your book, without a doubt, and probably have another resource or two to recommend.
I do. A very good book written some years ago but still available is called Risen Indeed, Making Sense of the Resurrection, written by a person that I know. He's a professor at Claremont Colleges, not too far from the RTB's headquarters here. Over there in Claremont. This is a book that deals both with the textual, theological, and philosophical objections that are raised. That, you know, how probable is this, the question of the miracle? This is a very powerful book, one, in fact, that a lot of atheists have felt the need to respond to. And so Steve Davis is a very thoughtful and reflective Christian thinker and philosopher.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. We'll also mention your book, Without a Doubt. You have a chapter in there as well, and you've also authored the book, A World of Difference. By the way, at least one of your books is being used as a text in several places, but I think recently we heard somebody in the UK has asked to use your
That's
book
right.
as a text.
I was very pleased to hear that a professor at one of the universities has asked to develop a new course about Christianity and why Christians believe it there in the United Kingdom, and he has requested that my book be one of the textbooks. So that's a very exciting idea. I mean, I became a Christian by reading C.S. Lewis's book, and I would always wonder, what would it be like to go to a university and bump into C.S. Lewis? Ooh. I never thought somebody might want to use one of my books in the United Kingdom, so it's very exciting.
Wow. Okay, again, the books are Without a Doubt and A World of Difference by Kenneth Samples. Thank you, Ken. This is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the historic Christian faith involves knowledge and is compatible with reason. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for Straight Thinking.
This podcast is made possible through support from individuals like you. To learn more about supporting Reasons to Believe, go to www.reasons.org/donate or call 800-482-7836.